Okay, so Bereshis is chapter 9, and I'm starting a little before the beginning of the chapter, a few verses in the end of chapter 8. And the reason I'm doing this is because this is clearly how the story should be split. We had the story of the Mabel, we had the story of the Mabel ending, and Noach and all the animals with him leaving the Taiva. And now we have another very important part of the story, and it seems to be like extremely important, maybe underrated when people read the story, maybe just because it's in the later in the parasha and we forgot to get to it. But there's needs to be a response to the cause of the Mabel. So the corruption of the earth and the God saying that he thinks he's regretting or repenting from creating man on earth and this whole thing was not a good idea. And therefore the world actually was destroyed. And of course, part of the story goes that Noach was saved. But it seems like that's not actually the end of the story. So in other words, one version of the story could have been, okay, all the evil people were destroyed and the tzaddik was saved. And that's the end of the story. Evil people are destroyed and tzaddikim are saved. But if you actually read what it says in the beginning, it doesn't say God said, I will destroy all the evil people. He said, I will destroy man. And I will save Noach. And I will create a covenant with Noach. Or I will save Noach because he is the only tzaddik. But it doesn't ever say, I will kill only the bad people. That's not the framing of this story. The framing is very clearly in every version and every time it says that the world was destroyed. And therefore, of course, there was an Noach was like an optionality left. There was an option left for the world to be recreated, to be regerminated from the seed of Noach. But it still needs a justification. It still needs an explanation. Just like everything in creation story has an explanation. There is words telling us sort of that God made the world or that he wanted to make it or that he commanded to be in however way you read it. There needs to be a justification, an explanation. We see an answer to the thing where there was reason to destroy the world since it's corrupted. And this answer is not going to be, okay, and from now on, whoever is going to be good is going to not have a Mabel, and whoever will be bad will go back straight in the Mabel. The answer is actually pretty explicitly, even for those who will be bad. Because this whole story, this whole way of doing things, of making everything destroyed, is not good. Of course, you could think of what changed. Something must have changed in between. There needs to be like some new level of creation or some new kind of stability in nature and in culture and something which caused this. But that's definitely the logic of the story. And then now there's two different parts, or three different parts, or four different parts. First, let's divide it like this. First thing is, Noach brings a carbon. So Noach builds a mezbeach. This is important. When you bring a carbon, it's not just making a sacrifice. There's often, we don't have this. This is interesting. Of course, Cain and Hevel, were carbonas, they did not build a mezbeach. Building a mezbeach, when we see later in the entire first Sefer Bereshis, and then, of course, later in Sefer Shemois, building a mezbeach is like the first act of building a temple, right? We don't realize that a mezbeach is not just like a tool where you create sacrifice. It's also like creating a place. This is the holy place, and this is where we will sacrifice to God. So Noach is the first one who builds a mezbeach. So he's not only doing sacrifice in some random way, he's making a place where to do it. And there's a difference between a sacrifice on a mezbeach and a sacrifice which is not on a mezbeach, which is not considered really a sacrifice, I guess. Okay, and he takes from the pure or clean behemoths, animals and birds, and he brings them oiles, which are burned entirely, sacrifices on the mezbeach. Okay, and of course, this is probably the explanation for why he brought so many of the clean ones or the pure ones. So it has to do with this, and possibly even the word tart, which you discussed, seems to be the same thing as what we learned later in Vayikra and in Devarim, that there's animals and birds which we eat and animals that we don't. Here it seems also maybe the primary meaning of that is there's animals that we sacrifice to God and animals that we don't sacrifice. So we don't sacrifice the impure ones, they're the ones that God sort of don't like, or however you want to say it. Okay, so and that's my next response. And now there's a response of God to the sacrifice, as we learned by Cain and Abel very explicitly. There's some concept, there's a way in which God responds to sacrifice and accepts it, and God very explicitly accepts the sacrifice, and it says in a very clear way, he smells the smell of the sacrifice, whatever exactly that is supposed to mean, and he says to his heart, this is corresponding to what Hashem said in the beginning of the story, I will destroy man because he all his plans, all his designs are bad. Here he says, Vayemer Shem Eliboy, to himself, not saying to Noach anything, he will speak to Noach soon. He says, I will not anymore curse the earth because of the man. Although, in other words, because the man whose heart is evil from his youth. And I will not anymore hurt or um, hit each all living things as I've done. But from now on, there will be these seasons. And this is the first time we have mention of seasons. I'm assuming that seasons were there before. But the point is, they would still continue the times of planting and the times of cutting and the hot and the cold and kaitz v'choref, which we translate as summer and winter, but I think it means something like the times of gatherings, the fruit of trees, and the times in which the trees lie dormant. And the night, all this will not ever stop. And apparently we're to assume that, of course, in the times of the Mabel itself, all these things did stop. Of course, Yom V'Layla, which are the first thing, the first order created in creation, we don't know if a reason seems to be from the story to think that the cycle of night and day has paused in the Mabel, but maybe they did. Since we discussed that the whole structure of creation seems to have been broken, it's possible that even the order of night and day, of course, the story does count nights and days, so there has to be some way of doing that, but in some sense, or maybe this is just saying, just like night and day don't stop, these other things won't stop anymore either. In any case, this is the response, and of course, we need to understand what changed. It doesn't clearly say what changed, why the same thing that seems to have caused it to be destroyed in the beginning is now causing it to remain. And in the, what it literally says, explicitly says, is that this is the response to the karm that Noach brought. So Noach caused God to change his mind. So this is, Noach doesn't speak to God, but it does bring a sacrifice that causes God to realize that he shall not do this anymore. Okay. Now there's a blessing to Noach, and this is very clearly repeating what we just had before when they left at the Mount Teva. We're repeating the sort of command or the permission to reproduce. And there it's framed as a blessing, literally in the same exact way as we had in the sixth day of creation. There's a blessing to Noach to reproduce, to multiply, to fill the earth, which is what exactly was what was told to Adam. And a bunch more verses, which are also more or less paraphrasing what was told to Adam. The Adam was told that he will be reigning over all the animals. Here it says something similar. It says their fear will be on all the animals, which is, I guess, the same thing. And then another thing it says is, and this is something that doesn't say before, and most people understand it as a big change, which is that all things, all living things, all insects first, and maybe even all animals, are given to you to eat as have given you the green grass. And this seems to be important from now, maybe because all the animals were saved by Noach. It doesn't say clearly why. There's a permission or a new, like maybe even a new nature, which is that man starts to eat meat of animals. Apparently, Adam HaRishon was vegetarian. At least that's the most simple reading, I think, of this story. And now they stop being vegetarians, and therefore there are limitations placed on this. Okay, and this maybe this has itself to do with the way in which Noach was a kind of consolation or a kind of fixing of the curse of Adam. The curse of Adam was, of course, specifically to his vegetarian diet, which is so hard. It's the grass of the field, which is hard to make bread out of and everything. And maybe meat is considered something which is less hard. Of course, you have to hunt it or you have to have domesticated animals which you can slaughter. But it seems to have a lot less etzef, right? A lot less hard work associated with it, or a different kind of hard work. We like literally talk about pastors as living a pastoral life, right? A more calm life, something more like Hevel. And Hevel, of course, also one who doesn't have so much curse given to him. Cain has the earth cursed again. And maybe that's part of the consolation or part of the fixing. But there are some limitations given on this. This is important. Even though it's permitted to eat the living animals, you should not eat basar benafshe damad. You should not eat blood. And it apparently seems to mean, because as it says later, the blood is the soul, somehow the soul of the animals. And animals here are said to have souls. And also explicitly in Bereshis Perek Aleph, animals have nefesh chai, have a living soul. And their soul is in their blood, so therefore you should not eat the blood. This is not entirely clear what this logic means. At least I don't entirely understand it. And another thing is, you should not, even though you can kill now, you're killing animals for their food, you should not kill humans. And this seems to be important, because if it seems to be like this distinction between humans and other living animals is not a simple distinction. It's something that has to be established here. So if, and before we had the story that humans and all animals are all eating grass, and also the story of the Mabel has humans and animals more or less on the same moral level or on the same existential level. They're all being living or dying in the same way. And how here suddenly And of course, even though we did have the reign of the man over the, all the animals in the first story, but now we have an even stronger reign of the man over animals, or a stronger distinction between humans and animals, where humans even eat animals, but so there's killing of living things, and there's these two important limitations. One is not eating their blood. Apparently, that's maybe the simple reading of this here is that that would be like too murdery to don't drink the blood, okay? At least that part of the soul, like keep sacred or something. And do not kill humans. But the humans that were the same equal to animals before, now, although now that we've permitted to kill animals, that is not because the humans are equal. We could just kill anyone and eat him, or I don't know, kill him for other reasons, but it should not be killed. And it literally says also animals are not allowed to kill humans. Of course, that's a funny thing to have as a command. Animals do whatever they want. But I guess the point is that this is a natural thing. Generally, humans will protect each other that animals don't kill them. So both from and both animals who kill humans and humans who kill humans should be punished. And that's the end of this part. It says, whoever spills the blood of a man, his blood should be spilled, since man is created in the image, or whatever tzelem means, of God. And this seems to be important. It's because we discussed that tzelem seems to be connected to this reign of man over the animals. And here we have that the fact that this reign is continuing here is expressed by the fact that we're not allowed to murder humans, although we do murder animals or eat them, if you don't want to call it murder. And therefore, there's an important punishment. If you kill a man, you should be killed. And that's the expression. If someone asks what we learn, what does B'Tselem Elohim mean? What it most clearly means, people talk about the dignity of humans, what it most clearly means is this law of capital punishment for murder. That's the one thing that it explicitly says is the result of the belief or the principle that man is created in the image of God. And this is true for animals too. And of course, we do have instances of in halacha later that an animal who kills a man gets killed, and not clear what that means exactly. But that's the establishment of these laws, or maybe like even these like social organizations, or these in some sense almost laws of nature. So that's the blessing of Noach. Okay, now we have a third thing, very important thing, a new thing, which is the last part of this chapter, which is the covenant. And this is basically the bris that God promised Noach in the beginning. And then besides with the bris, there's also a sign of the bris. That's another thing we'll talk about this. So firstly, there's a bris. So besides for having a blessing, there's like these four things. First, there's the story of the carbon, where God said to himself that he will not kill, destroy the earth anymore. There's the blessing to Noach, which includes the reproduction and the prohibition of murder. And now the third thing is, there is the establishing of the covenant. God said, I will establish a covenant between you and your children and all animals, between all living things. And the covenant is this promise that God promises that he will not anymore destroy or cut off all living things, all flesh, and inamable. That's the existence of the covenant. And we have to assume that this is has some expression in nature somehow. Maybe you could talk about it as men gaining the wisdom or the power to hold off the sea of destroying entirely the earth or something. We can build dams. I don't know. I'm thinking of a thought because I want to make this something that exists. Now, the next part of this is that besides for this being a covenant, and we learn much later, we'll talk a lot about bris, something important in the Torah, there needs to be a sign of it. So just nowadays we talk about contracts. We write maybe a piece of paper or something that signifies, that like shows that the covenant really exists. And here we have something similar, which is a sign, or oisabris, the sign of the covenant. And this is what what is the sign? The sign is the rainbow. So there's many discussions about how this is, what this naturally means or physically means. I'm just going to explain the meaning of it in the story here. The meaning of it is very simple. And of course, the Mabul was like the most exaggerated, the worst case of rain, which caused flooding and caused the whole world to be destroyed. Now, everyone knows most of the time or often after the rain, when the sun comes out and there's still, you know, the clouds in the air, there is a rainbow. So this rainbow is conceptualized here as the sign that God has. This is what shows the end of rain. So just like in the end of the Mabul, there is the end of Mabul, and that's what it says. Therefore, whenever there would be Va'ani Ananalot, when I will make clouds on the earth, so sort of this is the potential of creating a Mabul, there will be this cloud, and God says, I will see the rainbow, and I will remind myself of the promise that I made, of the covenant that I made, and therefore I will not destroy the earth. So what this shows us very simply, the logic of the sign of the covenant, just like so you could talk about Bris Mila, the sign of a covenant in the flesh of human beings. The sign of the covenant is just a way, or a simple way, I would say, to a reminder. We could talk about maybe in other ways, but the simple way is it's a reminder. If I have if I marry a woman, I give her a sign of our marriage, a ring, and that's like a sign. If I forget, or if she forgets, we look at the ring and we see, oh, we're married. And the same way, God said, I made a promise to you not to destroy you anymore, but what if I'll forget? We'll remember that there's like this law, this story works here that God can forget. You might forget. Does God forget? I don't know, but this is how it works. And he will see this rainbow, and the rainbow is something that comes when it starts to rain or it ends to rain. And he will remind himself of the covenant. So that's all. And he gives another statement. There's a third vehemer al-him in this chapter, and that's the last part of the chapter, which is that he says, Zois oisabris. This seems to be like a formal declaration. Like maybe that's how you create covenants. You have to you discuss the conditions, the conditions of the deal. And then you find something to be the sign. And we see later, Yaakov and Lev made a covenant and they made some pile of racks as the sign and so on. And then there's a declaration. You go on this existing thing that you're using as a sign and you say, this will be the sign. And then it becomes formally signed, or what you call signed, right? It becomes the sign of the bris. Now, but this chapter didn't end yet. There's not another whole story, really. And it's interesting to compare the story of Noach to the story of Adam. There's the story of Adam and the story of his blessings and so on. And then there's stories of Adam's children, and also a story of which children are considered the good children. So Cain was the murderer and was cursed, and Hevel was dead, but then Chase replaced him, or replaced to be the good child. Now something very similar, and this seems to be the main reason for this story existing, happens to Noach. So Noach is the re-beginning, the second creation. And there's a story of his three children. Everybody know that they were born. And how it says again, there were three children of Noach also going out of the Taiva. And like we saw, or we will see soon, about Noach's life. We have remembered that there's these lists of people's lives, and they were divided into before giving birth, after giving birth, and then the summary. And here in Noach, we have this another division, both for him and for his children. Noach had a life before the Mabul with an amount of years, and a life after the Mabul with an amount of years, and a total amount. So this is like a new level, a new creation, like a new kind of story. Just like, so now there's his children also. He has these three children coming out of the Mabul, Shem, Ham, and Yefes. And her important detail, Ham is the father of Canaan. This is a preface, something that we'll need to know for the story later. And these are the three children of Noach, from who the earth divided. So all the different families, different nations that we know now, are descendants of these three children, and they have different relations between one another, which will be explained in the next story. So now, Noach, Ish Adam, Noach, the man of the earth. So Noach is a farmer, is a planter. He plants a vineyard. This is, again, the first vineyard being planted in the story in the world. We don't know, maybe they were before, but not explicitly. Now, he drinks wine, he becomes drunk, and he becomes revealed in his tent. It doesn't say exactly what this means, but we'll just tell you what it says. Ham, the father of Canaan, again, important to mention Canaan here for some reason, sees his father's nakedness, and he tells his two brothers. His two brothers, Shem and Yefes, take the clothing, and they put it onto their shoulders. They walk backwards so they don't see their father's nakedness, and cover him, that's assumed. So that's the story of some. So whatever is clear is the story that Ham, the father of Canaan, did something wrong. It doesn't say that he did anything wrong. It's interesting, the word Vayar, right? Remember, Vayar Elohim, Vayar Noach, and so on. Here there is Vayar Ham, but it's a bad kind of seeing. And Shem and Yefes save their father, right? They covered up his nakedness. And now Noach wakes up, and he knows what his smaller son, so Ham called here the smaller son, or maybe Canaan, of course. For some reason, he starts talking about Canaan, and that's the big question and interpretation of the story, but Canaan or Ham, the father of Canaan, and he knows what happened. How did he know? I guess someone told him, or he did something factual, which is not really made explicit in the story, and he can see it. And he curses Canaan. He says, "Oder Canaan, he will be a slave to his brothers. Eved Avadim is just an intensifier, I think, a slave. Okay, that's the language, it's called an intensifier. He will be a slave. And this is, of course, a way to explain why Canaan has later become slave to his other brothers, to these nations said to be descendants of Canaan were slaves. The why not Ham itself, or in other words, there's other nations also descendant of Ham who were not slaves? That's a question. And on the other hand, he gives a blessing to Shem. It says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Hashem. Blessed is Hashem, the God of Shem. So, of course, why does he bless Hashem? What he means to say is, the blessing of Hashem should be on Shem. I'm pretty sure that's what it means. And he gives Canaan to be his slave. Of course, that's the other side of the story. He's a slave and he is the slave to him. And then he makes a nice wordplay. And it seems to be that we should read the previous thing also as a wordplay. So Shem is maybe like Shem Hashem. So Baruch Hashem Elohei Shem, right? It doesn't say Baruch Hashem, it says Yitkevavke, but there seems to be something. And then he says, Yefes also Yaft Elim Leyefes. And what does Yaft mean? Yaft means something like made nice or made wide, made space. And V'yishkem Baal Hashem. So in other words, God will be with Yefes and with Shem. That's why I said Baruch Hashem. Every time when we say Baruch Hashem on something, it's really putting the blessing on that thing. It's not only, we don't bless God. God doesn't need to be blessed. It's putting God's blessing on a thing. So saying Baruch Hashem Elokei Hashem is blessing Canaan. And this is made explicit. Elohim will be Yaft Leyefes, which again means something like be with him. And will be Yishkoim Baal Hashem, will dwell in the tents of Shem. So of course there's a tent here. Just like Noach was in his tent and he was defiled or somehow embarrassed by what happened to him, but Shem covered them up, Shem and Yefes, and therefore they get this blessing of their tents, and Canaan will be their slave. So that's the story for why Canaan turns out to be a slave to Yefes and Shem. And then we have the final part of Noach's life. Noach lived 350 years after the Mabel, and total 950 years, and he dies.